let's travel back to the 1980s.
Certain feeling carved by another's hand. Oh, but it's too late to hesitate. We can't keep on living like this.
Okay. Peter Murphy, you are here to talk about Sweet Dreams, the story of the New Romantics, a book by Dylan Jones. But your chosen subject tonight is the music of the 1980s. While I fix my eyeliner, can you identify the tracks that we just heard? How many of them?
My life is flashing before me. Four. Okay. Oh, yeah. Notorious by Duran Duran.
Correct.
Late Duran Duran. Love Action by the Human League.
Yeah.
Temptation by Heaven 17.
Yeah.
And Tainted Love by Soft Cell.
Oh, wow. Four out of four. No passes.
It's ingrained in the very lines in my palms.
Yeah, so we're talking about this book, Sweet Dreams. And I suppose, we're going to think of bands like Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet and New Romantics. We're often written off, though, for being more concerned with the frill on their shirt or indeed their eyeliner than their musical output. But Dylan Jones, editor-in-chief of GQ magazine, he wants to set the record straight in this book.
Yeah, I mean, the bands involved would agree very much about the importance of the haircut and the eyeliner and the cut of their jib. Dylan Jones has form in this regard. He did an amazing oral history of David Bowie a couple of years ago, and he's a very prolific author. He was there. He was there at the beginning of the Blitz Club. He was there for the post-punk. He was there throughout documenting this entire scene in what was known as the style press, something that didn't exist until the early 80s, which would have been magazines like The Face, Blitz, ID, and later on became Arena and GQ. The genius of the scene is a phrase of Brian Eno's. It's about the importance of the people who go to the gigs or go to the clubs or take the photographs or design the clothes or dress the stars or set up the record labels and the record shops as much as the people at the center of it. There's 153 people interviewed in this book. Mm. And
it's really a big tome, 600 pages or so, isn't it? Yeah.
It's quite extraordinary that this era hasn't been documented as deeply as this before, because this is a really important social document, as well as being an absolute hoot and a howl. I mean, some of the stories in here. There's a story of Duran Duran going on tour with David Bowie in Australia in 1983. And by all accounts, they made Motley Crue look like the monkeys.
Duran Duran, does that give me a reason to play this? It does. There we go. Girls on Film from Duran Duran. And actually, as that was playing, Peter Murphy, you were saying to me, what was that? What was the John Carney film? And it was Sing Street, which was set in this era.
There was a great line in Sing Street where the older brother is saying, John Taylor's a really good bass player, man. And it's like, just listening to that, they were good musicians. They were steeped in stuff like Chic and Giorgio Moroder and all that sort of New York dance floor stuff.
But Girls on Film, even the song, the theme of the song itself brings us to that Brian Eno phrase that you just gave us, the genius of the scene, because this videos were the big thing, I suppose, at the time as well. And Duran Duran, more than many, were extravagant in their video making.
Well, there's a period that Dylan Jones outlines, which is where you had Boy George on the cover of Rolling Stone, and the headline was something like Britain invades the USA again. It was the first time in 20 years that the charts were dominated. Now, a huge part of that was MTV. And the beginning of an era where, you know, record labels started to spend more on videos than they did on the entire album budget. And so you had an entire generation of bands like Visage. Steve Strange was the frontman of Visage. Rusty Egan and Midge were the main sort of musical players. Midge who'd done everything from Thin Lizzy, who guested with Thin Lizzy, and went on to, of course, join Ultravox. Steve Strange was the doorman on the Blitz Club. The Blitz Club was a Covent Garden Tuesday night club that was kind of sealed off. It was a safe space for people to experiment with the look, with the androgynous look. It was a really important place in terms of people being openly gay and not fearing getting beaten up. So that's where an awful lot of these bands stemmed from. Spandau Ballet were almost like the house band there. Steve Strange was the doorman, the proprietor. He basically picked the kinds of people that should be allowed into the club, as well as being an extraordinary looking gent himself. But, you know, there was some controversy as to the kinds of people who got turned away on occasion.
You talked there about the extravagance of things in those videos. And this was part of, politically, they were often castigated or criticised for very Tory attitudes.
There was a real split in terms of the media. So you had the old school, like The Enemy and Sounds.
And how does Dylan Jones handle that debate?
It's quite an extraordinary situation in that most of the musicians, most of the acts involved were left-wing socialists, apart from, I think, Tony Hadley, who was the only one in Spandau Ballet who was a Tory, and Gary Newman, infamously, was a Tory voter. But pretty much everybody else was pro-miners' strike, anti-Falklands War, politically engaged, if not explicitly in the songs, then in their interviews. Where the confusion came about was that they were so obviously flagrantly aspirational, you know. Yeah. And it was such an un-British movement because they were so much more American in its attitude. There's a scene in the book where one of Dylan Jones's friends, Fiona Dealey, who was one of the great scenesters at the time, is in the audience at a Roxy Music gig, and she's looking up at the VIP box and all these photographers like Anthony Price and these high society people, and she goes, I want to be there. Whereas perhaps in previous generations it would be, I want to tear that box down.
Yeah, punk certainly wouldn't want it to have been up there. There's no doubt about that. You talked about aspirational, you talked about Gary Newman. I suppose you don't get much more aspirational than, what kind of car do you want to drive? Ah, yeah. It's such a journey down nostalgia road, isn't it, when you listen to tracks like that, Gary Newman and Cars. But you were saying, as we were listening to that, Peter Murphy, you were talking about the importance of sci-fi, the importance of Kraftwerk, and this whole synth-pop idea that was a pop single.
It's amazing that that period was so futuristic and forward-looking. Mm. And it came out of a sort of a post-war era. So a huge influence on a lot of these bands would have been Kraftwerk and the other German bands like Can and Neu and Faust. Very futuristic industrial culture. And like the filmmakers at the time as well, Fassbinder and Wim Wenders and Herzog, they were all trying to build a new society and forget about World War II. Whereas the British kids were literally crawling out of potholes that hadn't been filled in since the Blitz. And in New York, you had a recession with, you know, rubbish bags left on the street, as there was in London with the strikes that were going on. And in Harlem and the Bronx, you had young black kids adopting really futuristic styles like wedge cuts and inventing hip hop and basically the seeds of Afrofuturism. So that came out of a really grim grey time in which there was no money and it was constantly.
But you make interesting connections. And does Jones do this in the book? You know, the importance of people like Stanley Kubrick, William Burroughs and J.G. Ballard to bands like Joy Division.
It's there. Yeah, he covers pretty much. He begins with the roots of this stuff, which is Bowie, of course, Roxy Music and Kraftwerk. They're like the Holy Trinity. And they all, while sometimes they're kind of a little bit postmodern and knowing and retro, they, even Brian Ferry, when he was, you know, crooning in his tux, he looked like, you know, it was in a space-aged club. And Andy McKay, the sax player, had a quiff that was 7 feet high and sprayed silver. And was, you know, and they all looked really alien. They looked freakish. And then you'd stuff like Giorgio Moroder and Donna Summer's I Feel Love, which sounded like, you know, the most erotic space age track you've ever heard. And it, a lot of this was because you had the original analog synthesizers, which looked like a switchboard, a telephonous thing. You had the microchip, which made synthesizers affordable. And idiots like us could play them with one finger.
He does meet up, Jones, obviously you said that this is, it's an oral history, that's his style of writing here. He does meet up with a lot of these ex-pop stars. Are there those who are just, you know, washed up and finished?
The story of Steve Strange himself is quite tragic, really. From as early as 1985, there's, you know, reports of him, you know, forever out in the clubs and talking about a new scheme that he had going. He died quite recently, but he really did kind of fade from the scene because he was a scenester. He was less a musician and more a kind of a curator, an incredibly important figure. But very much once that tide passed, he was beached. And what happened was after 1985, you had outliers like Adam and the Ants, who were amazing as well. They weren't really new romantics, but they were using visuals. But Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and The Tube. And after Live Aid, everybody started to get a bit more kind of, they either turned into stadium bands like Duran Duran or Simple Minds, or they became more concerned about being, you know, real bands like Eurythmics went from synth pop to being a proper band.
Eurythmics are the last band you mentioned. That's the last band we'd hear because they'd give us the title of the book. Are you recommending this, The Story of the New Romantics from Dylan Jones?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful book.
It's a wonderful book. It's also a wonderful track. Sometimes there's just not enough time. Sweet Dreams are made of this from the Eurythmics, finishing up that item on a book also called Sweet Dreams, The Story of the New Romantics, Dylan Jones, published by Faber and Faber. And it was Peter Murphy who was reviewing for us this evening. That's our lot for tonight. Liam Murphy and Paula Shields research. Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator. Gar Duffy, who was on sound this evening. See, people have masks on, it's hard to see. Gar Duffy was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Kay Sheehy. Talk to you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on RTÉ Radio 1.